chocolate category. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. In 3, 2, 1, chocolate fudge brownie.
Ooh. Oh, that's good.
Oh, that's good.
Especially with the brownie. I'm talking
81.
I'm talking 72.
Chocolate shake it.
Shake it what?
Oh, there's something chewy in there.
Oh, I like that.
I like that one less. I'm giving it a...
I like it more. 82.
58.
I think I
chocolate
like
therapy.
Mmm. It's a richer chocolate. But it's...
Oh, it's so dark.
Kind of boring. 43.
What? 72.
Hi, everybody. My name is Shauna, and this is the American English Podcast. My goal here is to teach you the English spoken in the United States through common expressions, pronunciation tips, and interesting cultural snippets or stories. I hope to keep this fun, useful, and interesting. Let's do it. Hi, everyone. We're already on episode number 80. Which is so exciting. I can't believe so many episodes have already passed. Hope you're enjoying this podcast. It's been a lot of work, but it's been a lot of fun for me, and I hope you've learned a lot. If you have been enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes. It would be really helpful to get the word out that this podcast exists. Today, we're going to be talking about the expression hit the spot and about Ben & Jerry's, which is an ice cream company that started in the state of Vermont and has become one of the top-selling ice cream brands in the world. Today, Ben & Jerry's ice cream, Froyo, which is frozen yogurt, and sorbet is exported to 38 countries. Right? Häagen-Dazs actually exports to more countries, but Ben & Jerry's earns more money. So the introduction in today's lesson was taken from a YouTube channel called Good Mythical Morning in a video titled, We Tried Every Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream Flavor. In the video, the hosts did exactly that. They rated 52 different flavors made by the company and found their top three favorites. The video is great for a few reasons. The first is that as an English learner, you'll hear a plethora of adjectives to describe desserts. Nutty, chewy, chocolatey, peanut buttery, bland, overly sweet, you name it. This video is jam-packed with adjectives. Secondly, if you're an ice cream fanatic like me, this video shines light on some interesting flavors I would never pick up on my own. For example, after watching this, I'm tempted to go to the store and pick up a pint of Peanut Butter World and Brewed to Matter, which is a coffee ice cream. Now, I understand that there are listeners in many countries that do not have Ben & Jerry's, or people who are listening that are not fans of ice cream. You're crazy, but that's totally okay. In this episode, you'll benefit as well. You'll not only hear some fun adjectives to describe these frozen desserts, you'll also hear how a friendship between two men, Ben and Jerry, created one of the most socially conscious companies in the U.S. today. Now, before we get to this cool story, I'd like to share a joke, an expression, and do some pronunciation exercises. I'll begin with the joke. Why didn't the ice cream sandwich like the popsicle? Any ideas? Because the popsicle had a stick up its butt. I have a feeling you understood this one, but for those who didn't, I'll explain. An ice cream sandwich is a type of frozen dessert that contains two soft cookie crusts and an ice cream center. The ice cream is sandwiched between the cookie crusts. A popsicle, on the other hand, is either frozen juice or ice cream on a stick. The stick goes up one end of the popsicle, making it possible to hold it while you eat it. When we say that somebody has a stick up their butt, it means that they're uptight, snobby, or just in a very bad mood. So someone with a stick up their butt is unpleasant to be around because they don't see the fun in anything. So this popsicle has a stick up its butt because it has an unpleasant character. And literally, because by nature, a popsicle has a stick up its bottom side. Does that make sense? Let's hear it one more time. Why didn't the ice cream sandwich like the popsicle? Because the popsicle had a stick up its butt. So that's it for the joke. Today, we'll be going through the expression to hit the spot. Before we get to the uses of this, let's go through the individual words. Hit is a verb, and it means to forcefully strike something. So the girl's brother accidentally hit her while play fighting, and she got a black eye. The is a definitive article. I lived in the house, not the apartment. Spot is a noun, and it means a specific location or point. There's a cool spot in the United States called Four Corners, where you can put your hands and feet in four different states at once: Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah. Yeah, so the expression to hit the spot means to give great satisfaction. It's a very popular expression in the United States and in American English, and it's most often used to talk about food or drink. So when a meal or drink hits the spot, it is absolutely perfect, and it is exactly what you wanted and needed at that moment in time. It's immensely satisfying. To hit the spot can also be used in other situations that are not food-related, but much less frequently. The origin of hit the spot dates back to the mid-1800s. However, it grew in popularity during the 1940s, when it appeared in a jingle for Pepsi, Coca-Cola's rival. A jingle is a short, catchy song that advertises a product. The Pepsi jingle went like this. Pepsi Cola hits the spot. 12 full ounces, that's a lot. Twice as much for a nickel, too. Pepsi Cola is the drink for you. Catchy, isn't it? Well, in the 40s, this jingle played frequently on national radio stations, and the expression, it hits the spot, got stuck in the public's head. Let's go through some examples to show how we use this expression in everyday life. Example number one, imagine that you just ran a marathon and you're pooped. In other words, you're extremely exhausted. During the run, you stay hydrated, but it's been hours since you last ate. All you want to do is sit down on the couch and chow down on a massive bacon cheeseburger. You're sure it'll hit the spot. You're sure, in other words, that it will satisfy your needs or your craving perfectly. So you order one. Example number two. Mrs. Brinkman is a fourth grade teacher, and for weeks she's been trying to get her students to enjoy reading. One day, she decides to assign Harry Potter as a class reading assignment, and the book hits the spot. It satisfies the desire of the students. It was the perfect solution to the obstacle she faced. The book hit the spot. Example number three. During college, I spent a year abroad in Berlin, and at that time in my life, I regularly went out for drinks with friends. After a night out, we were starving. We were ravenous, incredibly hungry, and we'd often find ourselves buying doona kebabs. A doona is a quick meal containing rotisserie meat, lettuce, and sauce, all inside of a pita-like bread. Without fail, the kebab would always hit the spot. It would satisfy our craving. It was exactly what we wanted. It hit the spot. That's it for the examples. Notice how two of the three contained food and drink, and that's just because that's how we use it most. So I recommend using this with food and drink. Let's move on to the pronunciation exercises. We'll start with the statement, thank you, it hit the spot. Repeat after me. Thank you. Thank you, it hit. Thank you, it hit the spot. Thank you, it hit the spot. And the conjugation, repeat after me. I hit the spot. You hit the spot. She hits the spot. He hits the spot. It hits the spot. We hit the spot. They hit the spot. There is an interesting thing that happens when a T at the end of a word is next to another T. So in this case, the T in hit and the T in the hit the, hit the. In American English, that will sound as if the T on hit is a glottal stop, right? Because it is next to this other T or a consonant, and it will run directly into the TH that follows. I hit it, right? There's the glottal stop. You stop the airflow. I hit the spot. Hit the, right? You don't hear that T on hit. So normally it hits the spot. So it's kind of funny to use pronouns before this expression. However, this is just to illustrate the conjugation of hit in the present tense. So that's it for the pronunciation, and it brings me to the topic of the day, which is how Ben and Jerry's came to be. Let's begin. If you could eat any type of frozen dessert, what would it be? Something fruity, perhaps, like a pineapple popsicle? What about raspberry and mango sorbet? If you're not a fruit lover, maybe the first thing that comes to mind is something richer, like a scoop of icy gelato on a waffle cone or a hot fudge sundae. For Jerry Greenfield and Ben Cohen, who were childhood friends from Long Island, New York, the answer would be, without a doubt, ice cream, frozen yogurts, and sorbet. Ben and Jerry founded Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream in 1978, and from its humble beginnings, it's now one of the most successful pint-sized ice cream producers in the world, making approximately 1 million tubs per day. How it all started is quite interesting, and how the company is run today is even more unique. So let's step back in time to hear their story. Ben and Jerry met in gym class during seventh grade. In an interview, Ben recalls that he and Jerry were the slowest and fattest kids in class, and they became friends fast because they were often huffing and puffing together at the back of the group while running laps. They remained best friends throughout high school, and although they went to different colleges, Ben to Colgate and Jerry to Oberlin, they stayed in touch. In those days, creating a world-renowned ice cream company was far from their wildest dreams. In fact, Ben dropped out of college to pursue an interest he had in pottery that he developed actually when he was a young boy. He brought that passion with him to New York City, but he soon realized that the high price of the city meant he would need to work all day, every day, just to pay rent. So on the side, he started working in a pediatric emergency center and as a taxi cab driver. Shortly afterwards, he set up an arts program at a school in upstate New York, and in his free time, drove his truck around to craft fairs where he'd try and sell his pots. Unfortunately for him, it wasn't much of a success. Meanwhile, his good friend Jerry had graduated from Oberlin College in Pennsylvania and moved back in with Ben, who was busy selling his pots, or at least trying to. In 1973, and again in 74, Jerry failed to get into medical school. It was right about that time that the two decided to start a business together, and they wanted to do something in the food industry. At first, bagels came to mind. New York is famous for its bagels and schmear, which is what they famously call the cream cheese they spread on it. The problem was the machinery needed to make bagels was out of their budget. So they settled on ice cream, which was fairly cheap to make. In the most basic recipe, you needed just cream, eggs, sugar, and salt. Not to mention, Jerry had worked at Oberlin's cafeteria as an ice cream scooper. So at least there was a bit of experience. To gain more knowledge in ice cream making, They took a correspondence course for $5, offered by Penn State. A correspondence course is essentially distance learning by mail, by snail mail. So with their $5 investment and some basic knowledge, they began concocting in the kitchen. Now, there was one drawback. Ben suffered from a condition called anosmia, which is also known as smell blindness. In a nutshell, a lack of sensitivity in his nose made it harder for him to taste and distinguish flavors, and therefore Jerry became responsible for the taste of the ice cream. Ben insisted on adding chunks and texture to it to make the ice cream more interesting. Chunky additions such as fudge, cookies, brownies set the ice cream apart from competitors. With the first flavors perfected, they decided to open up shop. In their mind, they knew that an ice cream shop would be most successful if it was located next to a university, because college kids liked going out and having ice cream. So they found a campus that didn't already have an ice cream shop, and that was in Burlington, Vermont. They didn't have the $40,000 it would cost to open up a physical restaurant, but they could afford an old gas station. It just needed a fresh coat of paint and a bit of love. So with just $4,000 each and a $4,000 loan from the bank, they were in business. That was in 1978. It was the beginning of summer at that time, the weather was warm, and the sweet treat was an immediate success. Ben had made a bunch of blue pottery bowls for the guests to eat from when they sat inside the restaurant, but the joint also offered cones and bowls to go. People came and went, and then came back again for seconds. One thing that Ben and Jerry did that customers found creative and charming was that they made sure ice cream flavors had clever names and meanings. Many were puns. For example, Cherry Garcia, which contains cherry ice cream with cherry chunks and fudge flakes, is an homage to Jerry Garcia, the famous guitarist from the Grateful Dead. Gimme S'more is another ice cream name, and it sounds like give me some more. But as you might know, a s'more is a popular dessert eaten in the U.S. while camping. That ice cream is toasted marshmallow ice cream with chocolate cookie swirls, graham cracker swirls, and fudge flakes. Ice cream flavor suggestions from consumers have always been accepted, such as Chunky Monkey, a banana ice cream with fudge chunks and walnuts. They say that you'll go bananas for it. In American slang, we would say you go ape shit for something. Excuse my language. And Chubby Hubby, which is vanilla malt ice cream, peanutty fudge-covered pretzels with fudge and peanut buttery swirls. By nature, the duo were risk takers. Once they made two flavors that the public didn't like at all because they were vulgar. One was called Go Fudge Yourself and the other, Sweaty Balls. Ugh. Some vendors refused to sell them. In a 2015 interview, when asked if they'd consider making weed ice cream in states where marijuana is legalized, Ben commented, "Makes sense to me. Combine your pleasures." Jerry commented that he would if he could, but he's not in charge of the company anymore. Only time will tell if they actually do it. So why are Ben and Jerry not in charge of the company anymore? In the year 2000, Ben & Jerry's was purchased by Unilever for $326 million. It wasn't a traditional corporate takeover, though. With it, Ben & Jerry gave up their authority, as normal. However, they did manage to keep the company socially and environmentally conscious. They also kept a mission to contribute positively to the community, the nation, and the globe. Now, it all starts with the community and employees. No employee can earn more than 5 times the amount of any other employee. That means if you earn $10 per hour, the CEO can't earn more than $50 per hour. Normally, corporations have a 50-to-1 ratio, not 5-to-1. They believe that capitalism does not treat everyone equally, And there is something that large corporations can do about it. They also wanted to help the community. Nowadays, they source from local, family-owned businesses. A good portion of the cream in the ice cream actually comes from cows in the state of Vermont. They also try and help the nation. 7.5% of their pre-tax income goes to grants that support disadvantaged groups, families, and children, as well as the environment. The two are fairly business savvy, and so they also let the flavors do political work for them. For example, to inform the world about climate change, they created a flavor called Save Our Swirled, which had raspberry ice cream, marshmallow and raspberry swirls, plus dark and white fudge ice cream cones. As a result of this ice cream, 300,000 fans signed up to support clean energy through a petition called the Aves Petition. Another ice cream that pushed for a good cause was fish food ice cream. Fish food spelled with a PH, named after the band Fish. The ice cream not only supports family farms by using their cream, it also gives a portion of its royalties to environmental restoration of Lake Champlain, one of the beautiful lakes that's located in New York, Vermont, and Canada. Other ice creams have supported education, like Americone Dream, helped programs to teach reading in low-income neighborhoods, like Liz Lemon, or to support the homeless, like Chocolate Fudge Brownie. Not all of these flavors have stayed around, unfortunately. When a flavor dies, there's an actual funeral for it in Vermont and a ceremony where they bury the ice cream in what's called a flavor graveyard. This can actually be visited if you are in Waterbury, Vermont. Before we wrap this up, I'd like to share other random facts about their ice cream. And I'm not trying to sell their ice cream, these are just interesting. In addition to non-GMO products, cage-free eggs, and a belief in fair trade, they make sure that both the producers and consumers are happy. Every year, since 1975, they have Free Cone Day. In 2020, because of COVID, it's the first year that it didn't take place. Thirdly, today, Ben & Jerry's earns more money than any other ice cream brand in the U.S. In 2019, Ben & Jerry's earned $681.5 million. One thing I've probably never mentioned on this podcast is that Lucas and I are crazy about ice cream, and really any frozen dessert. When we lived in Brazil, after a long day of work, we'd sit on the couch and share a massive bowl of açaí with condensed milk, milk powder, and fruit toppings. Now that we live in California, we don't have affordable açaí, and so we're big supporters of Ben & Jerry's, Häagen-Dazs, and Talenti, which are readily available and somewhat affordable in the U.S. Sometimes we buy pints of frozen yogurt, sometimes gelato, sometimes sorbet. It really depends on our mood and what we think will hit the spot. Recently, my dad was asking us why we spend our money on such expensive ice cream. He has a massive sweet tooth and doesn't see the logic in buying pint-sized containers when half gallons here, and sometimes full gallons, are the same price. In my local grocery store, just to give you an idea, a typical pint of Ben & Jerry's and Häagen-Dazs is between $3.50 and $5. So we tried to explain to him how it tastes better and it's colder. In the US, ice creams are labeled as premium or super premium when they have less air inside, less than 50% overrun. In other words, 50% of the air. As a result, the fat content is higher and the ice cream feels colder and denser. Brands like Häagen-Dazs and Ben & Jerry's are not only super premium, so you're not paying for air, but they also have higher quality ingredients. Ben & Jerry's, as we heard in this episode, also supports a lot of different causes. Is this interesting for you? If you are in the US and are interested in our favorite pints, be sure to check out the Instagram post for this week. You can find the page at American English Podcast. Hope you enjoyed and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the American English Podcast. Remember, it's my goal here to not only help you improve your listening comprehension, but to show you how to speak like someone from the States. If you want to receive the full transcript for this episode, or you just want to support this podcast, make sure to sign up to premium content on AmericanEnglishPodcast.com. Thanks, and hope to see you soon.